were not here at the first, I am a behavioral epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of Virginia and the research director of the National Social Norms Institute. Although I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, the National Social Norms Institute was begun with a gift from the Anheuser-Busch Foundation. Projects that I work on currently have funding, as you can see, from a variety of sources. The data that I'm presenting in this presentation is from the data that was funded through the Anheuser-Busch Foundation gift. So I'm going to really quickly take you through what social norms interventions do not do, what they do, why they work, some characteristics, evidence of effectiveness, limitations, conclusions, with most of the time, I hope, spent on evidence of effectiveness. So this is compared to some other popular methods for public health marketing. They don't terrorize. This is what would be characterized as terrorizing in terms of some kind of typical public health marketing advertising. They don't stigmatize, an example of a poster that stigmatizes. They don't accentuate the negative, an attractive poster, but actually the words smoke-free are composed of cigarettes. And they don't normalize. Here again is a very attractive poster done by the Illinois Attorney General's office. It doesn't terrorize, stigmatize. However, if you looked at this poster, you would assume that most adults in Illinois smoke, which is far from true. So what social norms interventions do is to accentuate the positive. Remember that last poster? Well, if it were accurate, it would look like this. And it would say something like, dare to be part of the majority, rather than dare to be different. They teach what the true norm is in a population, and they promote self-efficacy by giving you the message that most people are able to either avoid the negative behavior or do the positive behavior, and so you would be able to do it too. But why do they change behaviors? Well, that can be a whole presentation in itself and often takes several class sessions when I'm teaching about it, but I think the simplest way is if you think about peer pressure. Social norms interventions basically use a kind of peer pressure idea. Others' choices influence our own choices throughout our life, but particularly at certain stages of life when we're in transition. And as Donna pointed out, coming to college is a transition stage. Unfortunately, our perceptions may not conform to reality, and we find that this is often true with college students in regard to how much their peers drink. Going back to the National College Health Assessment data, which you've now heard referred to several times. This is from their spring 2008 assessment, which included about 80,000 students. One question asked, how many alcoholic drinks did you have the last time you partied or socialized? The mean for that among these 80,000 students was 4.1. Another question asked, how many alcoholic drinks do you think the typical student at your school had the last time they partied socialized? That mean was about 1.5 drinks higher than the true mean. So the social norm theory is that by driving down the perception, you can drive down the actual drinks. Here's our logic model. We begin with our intervention goal of correcting the perception of norms. The reason we want to correct that perception is because we believe that that will decrease alcohol use, and the reason we want to decrease alcohol use is to decrease the alcohol-related morbidity and mortality. We want harm reduction. So how do we correct the perception of the norms? Well, the most popular way, though not the only way, as we heard just previously, social norms information is included actually in the basics program, but social norms marketing campaigns are probably the longest used, certainly within a college context, intervention. And that is based on this relationship, the correlation between personal alcohol misuse and misperception of the norms. So this is our logic model, and what I will be focusing on is giving you the results from several schools of their social norms marketing campaigns. But first, what are the characteristics of a social norms marketing campaign? Well, Michael Haynes, one of the early implementers at the University of Northern Illinois, used the acronym PIE to characterize social norms marketing campaigns. They're positive, they're inclusive, they're empowering. All right, good theory, great media. Does it work? What evidence do we have that it works? First, a little bit about our participating schools. For this analysis, I used 5 universities, 4 public and 1 private. They're from throughout the USA. The universities varied from an undergraduate enrollment of about 14,000 to about 46,000. The funding, as I mentioned earlier, for this project is from the Anheuser-Busch Foundation. The source of the data is American College Health Association's National College Health Assessment. And because this has come up repeatedly, let me just pause here to say that in order to be included in the national database for this instrument, you do have to administer the survey to a random sample of students. And in fact, in our universities, the universities that work with the National Social Norms Institute, that is, we encourage and help them to stratify that random sample. Because we work with many different universities, they administer the NCHA on different schedules. A few do it every year. Most of them do it every other year. So not all of the universities are included in every year's data here. Each university develops its own campaign using a 5-step model. These are illustrative posters from 2 of the universities. The 5-step model, first you choose your audience because the entire intervention needs to be very audience specific. You gather and evaluate the relevant data about that audience. You develop and test the message with that audience. You implement the campaign, and of course, you evaluate its effectiveness, because otherwise, people like me wouldn't be employed. This is just a few posters to give you a flavor of how different the messages look. The messages were basically the same, expressed in different ways, but the basic messages were the norm in our school is safe drinking. However, as you can see, the messages were put across in very, very different ways, with images that had and message style that had particular appeal at each university. All right, this is one of these slides that are the bane of audiences and presenters. I've attempted to make it a little more palatable by revealing it only a bit at a time. By school, this is what our sample looked like. First, you can see the number from each school in our sample. The mean age varied probably less than any other single characteristic, from just under 20 to just over 23. The percent females were the majority of the sample in all of our schools, but again, it varied from about 58 all the way up to a high of about 71. The percent white, we had a huge variation here, with one school actually being primarily non-white, with only 43% white, all the way up to another school being primarily white, with 85% white. The percent in residence halls, again, we see a huge variation from less than 8% in residence halls to over half, to almost 61% in residence halls. And the percent in fraternities and sororities from a low of about 5% to a high of about 15%. So another question about the demographics, we're looking across 5 years, well, or I think more, did the schools change in those 5 years? Well, the answer is for schools 1 and 2, yes, the demographics did change. The percent of whites went down, the percent of Hispanics went up. In school 2, every single one of our demographic characteristics changed over the time period of the study. For schools 3 and 4, school 3 had our least change. The percent in residence halls went down. School 4 changed in sex, race, and residence over the course of the study. And school 5 changed in everything again. So, you know, one of the characteristics of working with the university population is it only appears to be a population. It's really different populations. And in fact, within a 4 or 5 year period, if you're working with undergraduates, it typically turns around virtually completely. So we controlled for all demographic variables in our analysis. We used a linear mixed effects model to look at the answers to 2 questions. Did perceptions change across the years? We used that ACHA, NCHA perception question. How much do you think the typical student at your school drank the last time he, she partied, socialized? We controlled for the demographics and we looked within each school. And of course, we were also interested in did use change? You know, it's no good changing perception if we don't change use, because that's what we want to change. So the results for the perception question, we had highly statistically significant results. We showed that the perception varied by school, but it also varied by year of the survey. For actual drinks, again, we see that actual drinks varied by the perception, by the year of the survey, and by the school. Okay, so once again, those are beautiful statistics. Let's try and look at what they actually mean. All right, so this is by school. So there's a section on the graph for each school. And the y-axis, the unlabeled y-axis, for which I apologize, is the mean perceived drinks from 2002 to 2009. In school 1, you can see that at the beginning, the mean perception of how much the typical student drank was over 6 drinks, and that decreased it decreased all the way down to just over 4 drinks in 2006, and then it started climbing a little bit again. But it's still an overall decrease because it only went up to 4.5. Thanks very much. Our mean perceived drinks in school 2 didn't decrease as much, but look at that beautiful linear line. Oh, I love it. School 3, we only have 3 data points, but again, it's a lovely linear decrease. School 4, with 4 data points, has a small but statistically significant steady decrease. School 5 looks a little bit more like school 1. It's got more variation, but as you can see, the last 2 years show significant decreases compared to the first year. What about actual drinks? School 1 had a very low mean for actual drinks, and they really didn't do anything. They bounced around over the years among the same level of actual drinks. School 2 had a higher level of actual drinks and has decreased over the years. School 3, with a still higher level of actual drinks, has also decreased. School 4 has not decreased. It's stayed the same. And school 5 has some bouncing around as for the perception, but the actual drinks did have a very significant decrease for school 5. Quickly, there are a lot of limitations to this study. Exposure to the intervention is not included in this analysis. We do not know per school how many students saw the intervention and how frequently they saw it. All of the schools were doing other things. This social norms campaign was the only consistent thing across the schools. There were no other consistent changes across the schools. But there were related events, both positive and negative, and those are not included. And as I've mentioned before, the National College Health Assessment does have moderate to low sample response rates. The external validity, as my previous presenter noted, you always need to consider the population characteristics in extrapolating it to your environment. We have very diverse schools, as you could see in our sample, which makes it a bit more extrapolatable. However, they are all four-year residential universities in the United States. The environmental characteristics need to be taken into consideration. If any of you know Bill DeYoung's work, his NIAAA study, funded study of the effectiveness of social norms interventions, succeeded on first study and failed on replication. And the evidence points to environmental characteristics, specifically the number of alcohol outlets within a certain radius of the campus as influencing that failure of the replication. So if you like, you can think of social norms interventions as towards the top of a pyramid of interventions. And the bottom of the pyramid has to be your environment. And then there are issues of implementation fidelity. Not everything that calls itself a social norms campaign is a social norms campaign. So the conclusions that we can make: the misperceptions decreased in all five schools in real world settings with very diverse schools. So we can say very confidently that social norms campaigns are successful in decreasing misperceptions. Actual drinks decreased in four of the five schools, although in one of those four, only marginal decreases. This presentation, I hope, also highlights the importance of longitudinal data. And I want to emphasize that social norms campaigns are typically not something that you will see dramatic results from in your first year of implementing it. This is a multi-year commitment, and you need to look at multiple years of data to clarify the effects and the relationships. Thank you.